Welcome back to the Thursday front page, 94.7 The Pulse. My name's Rob Cameron on the line now. Sue Barrett, she's joined us a few times before. Happy to have her back. We're going to be talking about some stuff just to get the mind open a little bit more. Sue, good morning to you.
Good morning, Rob. Nice to be with you again.
It's good having a chat. The little topic that you popped up this morning is, I like the sound of it, what's behind the brand, and whatever that brand may be, the perception of it and how it's accepted and delivered, and there's so much mystery behind some of it.
Yes, well, I mean, I suppose what is a brand? I mean, it's really an embodiment of someone or a group's philosophy, their intentions, how they would like to be perceived, you know, what it is they want to actually have you think or believe about them. And it doesn't matter what kind of organisation or, you know, group you are, you know, people seem to have some way of being able to understand you through a brand, so to speak.
Down in our little town of Geelong, the one that stands up really well for me is the changing of the brand of the Geelong Football Club, which was about 23 or 4 or 5 years ago. Frank Costa, Brian Cook said about it, there's a cultural changes and the brand that stands for now, what it means, the way it's perceived by Geelong people and, more importantly, people in the whole of Australia. And that was a revitalisation which everyone now lives and breathes that brand. That's one of my favourite brand change stories with great success.
Oh, absolutely. And a brand is just, you know, a sort of result of what actually lies within. And I think, you know, being a former, you know, Geelong person, also, you know, obviously a Cat supporter, I watched that with great interest because, you know, up until, you know, that time that you mentioned, I don't know, the brand, you know, we had lots of potential and lots of opportunity, but we never seemed to convert it into a premiership, right? And then they really looked at going into leadership. And this is the thing. There's a great German saying. It's an old saying. And it says, you sweep the staircase from the top. And so leadership in an organisation such as Geelong Football Club, this is what they started with. They really looked at the culture and the leadership qualities and capabilities and intentions of what was actually happening inside the club. And they basically came up with what they wanted to do, how they wanted to behave, how they wanted to represent themselves, and what would actually constitute a healthy, prosperous, flourishing culture rather than one that perhaps previously wasn't working for them.
And interesting, there are other organisations perhaps that set up to create a brand that is perceived in a certain way to sell their product or their service, but don't necessarily live and breathe those standards internally of the organisation. We probably hear and see plenty of those about. And so that's about building that brand and the reasoning for building a brand. It's quite an interesting one. And I suppose at this particular stage, we see a lot, we were talking last week about greenwashing in mining companies, the perception they build of themselves climate change and emissions, but the reality within a totally different story.
Absolutely. You know, people can put labels on themselves and promote that they're this or that and holier than thou, but dig beneath the surface and you often find that they're just a label. There's actually no substantive change actually happening, which is why we have to be really mindful about just judging people via a label, because it's a lot more complex than that. And when you actually have people, you know, just wanting to sort of, you know, persuade and convince people that they're a good, I'm doing air quotes here, you know, a good corporate citizen, when in fact they're behaving anything but. This is why I think people can't be treating things superficially. They really need to have a look beyond what is actually being promoted in the PR and spin that's out there.
In the political world at the moment, I see the Australian Labor Party at the moment probably going through an internal rebranding, what they stand for, and there's been a lot of change from, say, a Liberal Party that you and I first voted for. You were obviously a fair bit younger than me, but back in the 70s, early 80s, when we started to vote, that the Labor Party and what it stood for in those days is not even close to what the perception is these days. Do you think that they're internally at the moment either deliberately or accidentally going through a rebranding?
Sorry, do you mean the Labor or the Liberal Party?
The Labor Party. I just find that of recent times they seem to be pushing further and further to a different philosophy than the one that they had. Certainly the Liberal Party haven't, we'll talk about them shortly, but even the Labor Party, who are are the opposition, are really struggling to find their own identity.
I do think that's the case. This is the challenge with humans. There's actually a really good book that I came across, and I'm just grabbing it here actually. It's called How We Became Human and Why We Need to Change. And it's a really interesting book. It's by a guy called Tim Dean. He's actually an Australian philosopher. And maybe if I just give you a little bit of background on this, and that can set the framework for then my comments about the Labor Party and then subsequently the Liberal Party. This is just back of his book, if I can read it to you. Over thousands of years, humans have developed mechanisms to help live together in ever larger social groups. We developed a set of moral emotions such as empathy, guilt and outrage, as well as a tendency to favour people in our in-groups and a propensity to punish perceived wrongdoers. Our culture has evolved, giving us powerful tools like religion and politics that could expand community sizes and maintain moral order. He goes on to say, while these mechanisms served our ancestors well, though we evolved a sense of right or wrong Our sense of right or wrong is out of step with the modern world. Social media can turn outrage into an addiction. Gender equality is still hampered by caveman thinking, and implicit bias turns to explicit oppression. How do we separate what's natural from what's right? How can we reshape our thinking to thrive in the modern world? Now, the reason why I read that out to us is that this is the problem. A lot of people are making decisions based on old thinking, and they're having trouble rearranging themselves. And this is where, if you stand for one or two things, but the world is much more complex than that, then, of course, your brand, your views, your philosophy comes under threat or under pressure to adapt and change. So I can't speak, I'm not a Labor person or a Liberal person, I'm more apolitical, I like to observe what's going on. But I suspect there's a whole lot of changes happening that are actually throwing spanners in the works in terms of what was the Labor ideology or philosophy that they had adhered to for so many years, and then how they're making that adapt or work. Is that keeping people in the tent or forcing some to go out? And, you know, and it's all very complex and convoluted. The challenge any party has is if they don't go outside of the tent and start to talk to diverse, you know, other people with other views and ideas and lived experiences, they will risk atrophying and actually just imploding. It's not just the Labor, it could be anyone.
Yeah, what was interesting to me was the confusion at the 2019 election with the Labor Party around climate change and their relationship with the mining industry. And they seem to have two different policies in the north and south of the country, which looked odd. So they were probably trying to find their identity there. And I think the most interesting one was they took the franking credits and negative gearing policies to the previous election, and they've already announced that they've abandoned them, which was really surprising because that's, to me, was very much Labor Party heartland stuff of the 70s, 80s. That's what they're talking to. So they've abandoned that type of policy. It's hard for them now to find a true differentiation between them and the current government in a lot of areas. So how are they going to go to an election and say, we are different because? Because it looks to me like all they're going to do is hope that it's a popularity contest and they win.
Well, unfortunately, politics has descended, not just here in Australia, but around the world, into a popularity contest. One of the main reasons is because of this reductionism approach, where we reduce everything quickly down to some one or two things that are the answer, which, as you know from our previous discussions, whenever you try to explain a complex issue with simplistic terms, it's always wrong. So this is a challenge that we have in terms of how people are operating. When you come back to, you know, an organisation, doesn't matter who it is, if you don't know where you're going, every rogue will lead you nowhere. And what ends up happening is that that confuses whoever you're trying to engage, persuade and convince to work with you, follow you, vote for you. And so this is why coming back to being really clear about what you stand for, how you need to rethink what it is that you want to take to market. And I think, you know, the Geelong Football Club, if we go back to that example, they realised that whilst they had lots of talented people in their teams, they weren't succeeding in the ultimate prize, which was to, you know, win premierships. So they really had to go back to grassroots and think about, well, what are we? What do we really stand for? How do we want to operate? What do we want to, you know, be as an organisation? What values do we adhere to? What behaviours do we want to endorse and support? How do we want to conduct ourselves? How do we want to be seen by others? How do we want to interact with our community and be the best that we can be? Now, that's a lot of introspection, and you've got to think about that. But you've also got to bring in outside ideas and views to help you adjust and change. And this is the problem, again, if people don't go outside of their tent and look at what's actually happening out in the real world and how people are evolving and changing, you can't adapt yourself to be able to still be relevant and function in a healthy way within that society.
Yeah, and the, interestingly, a lot of those, particularly the younger ones that come into the organisation, are basically taught the culture on arrival, and this is what we stand for, this is who we are, you're either with us or not. And after a period of time, some clearly don't meet the mark, if you like, and are moved on quickly, because the culture is always going to override any talent or skill or individualism that some might bring in. They've got to buy into the culture, and this is the most, well, being a supporter of the club, the proudest part about being a supporter is that they've been very strong on that, and they've built that consistent strength with that at the core.
Yes, and I think where you've got challenges with, well, the political system, for example, I watched, as you know, I'm part of Voices of Goldstein, and also part of looking at how we can get more independence into Canberra. And last night I was, I participated in, or more so watched and listened to, a wonderful webinar where we had Karen Phelps, we had Zali Stegman, and we had Helen Haynes. Karen Phelps was an independent, the other two are still independents in Parliament House Canberra. And they were talking about the power of independence and the importance of that and the challenges that we actually have with the current political parties. The challenge we have with a lot of the political parties is they're not actually bringing in people with diverse lived experiences. They're bringing people in who just are part of the political machine. They don't know what it's like to run a business or be in the hospital system, you know, running wards. They don't know what it's like to be a teacher, etc. So in the past, if you look at our politicians over the course of the last 100-plus years, quite a few had different lived experiences. But a lot of the people now in the main political party don't have any. They've never actually been accountable to anything, really, in terms of actually, you know, running, working out in the real world. And some of them have law degrees, but that's okay. But we don't want just a bunch of lawyers in there either. We need people with true lived experiences. And so this is what was being said last night in this webinar, and not just last night, but has been said more broadly, that we need people to represent the real world in politics. And I think if you bring that in, that will help reshape how our political system actually works. But like I say, if you keep drinking your own Kool-Aid and you only keep looking at each other inside the tent, you're not going to actually be representative of what's actually happening and changing out in the broader community.
And, of course, the culture in Canberra has been under question for quite a long time, and you're a big driver in the March for Justice campaign to really highlight this. And sadly, in that period of time, I haven't seen too much want to change, and I guess it's the problem, and what independents are also up against is that neither the Labor Party nor the Liberal and National parties would be wanting independents to come in and, if you like, muddy the waters in the crossbench, whereas we, the voters, would want nothing more than that diversity in Parliament. But there's going to be a big fight from the major parties to stop that from happening.
Oh, absolutely. And so, you know, if you're in power, you don't want to secede power. So this is what's important. But if we were, if we want to have proper representative democracy in Australia, that's why more of us as regular humans, regular people in the community, you know, need to become aware about what's actually happening. Because if we don't, then the things that the others want will sneak up on us, and we might find ourselves in a very different situation than we expected to find ourselves in, and for the worse. So this is the challenge that we have, is that when we find what big parties try to do is they try to label us versus them, right? And so they want to create this kind of, you know, divisiveness and tribalism. And in fact, you know, labels are rife within politics, and, you know, they label someone, you know, a greenie, a lefty, or a this or a that, and you go, hold on a moment, humans are much more diverse than that. Mm. Humans come with all sorts of lived experiences. And just because I care about climate change and the future of our world doesn't label me an extremist greenie. Just by the background, I'm actually a very reasonable person.
Yeah, we just lost you there for a minute.
Trouble. Oh,
that's better. You've come back.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I was having a conversation with someone last night and during the week on email about that exact thing about being pigeonholed. You're either a lefty or you're not. I don't know what they don't have righties. I suppose that's a conservative. It's very odd here because in America a liberal is deemed to be a lefty, and over here they're conservative. So there's a lot of confusion. But there's Marxists and communists and socialists. They're all lefties, and I don't know what the righties are called, but there seems to be this drive within the community now that you must be one thing or the other. But you correctly pointed out that it's possible to be a combination of it. You can be a capitalist and a socialist mixed up, because and I guess that's sort of what you are. You still believe in a capital system to drive economy, but you've got to have a conscience about the society you're living in.
Well, I think that when we're looking at, you know, I just come back to human decency and being reasonable. And that's why I don't like to subscribe to a political party, per se. I mean, the thing that, you know, with Voices of Goldstein and the frustrations that a lot of our constituents are having is that the things that we care about are not being represented. And the things that we care about when you look at them in depth are really about having a stable, flourishing, healthy society that actually is respectful of humans. I mean, what's wrong with wanting to democratise the political process and have an ICAC, you know, and have freedom of information and having, you know, politicians held to account? What's wrong with restoring a healthy climate and environment for current and future generations? What's wrong with creating social cohesion and economic prosperity? Nothing's wrong with that. That's actually a healthy society, a healthy democracy. But, I mean, just because I care about climate, it's easy for people to throw labels. But this is the problem I said right at the start of our conversation, is that people just accept the label and then just say, okay, that's who you are. No, it's not who I am. I'm actually talking about a range of things. If we don't look beyond the label, then we start judging people and we then start putting them into different buckets. And then we also, too, what's the worst thing that happens is that the labels we put on people are often for us to feel a sense of superiority. Oh, I'm better than you.
Mm.
And that's such a load of rubbish. We don't know where people have come from, what has happened to them. And I know this might sound a bit weird or radical or whatever, but whenever I see something terrible happen and someone's committed an awful crime or something like that, I know this might sound weird, but I always think, what must have their childhood been like for them to have this happen, for this to happen, right? I try not, I mean, I'm upset with what's happened. I don't, you know, diminish that. Of course it's terrible. But I also think, what must have their childhood been like or circumstances been like for that to have emerged?
Who has been their role model, mentor? And I guess anyone who's spent any time teaching children, particularly in a sporting group, you get quite diverse, and there's the odd behaviour amongst the group. I learned at an early age doing that, that is exactly what you're required to do. Perception is reality. So what is driving the perception of these people to be different? And once you drill down into that, as you correctly pointed out, the picture completely changes.
Well, that's right. And a lot of people, you know, with mental health and, you know, people sort of going, oh, you know, people with depression, why don't they just get over it and all that kind of stuff. The problem is that depression, when you're anxious or depressed, it actually creates a physiological change to your system. It increases cortisol. That actually sends chemicals around your body. It affects how your body operates, and so it's not just some mental thought. A mental thought is part of an energy system that's affected by all sorts of biochemicals in our body, right, that are there naturally. And so if I'm constantly in a state of anxiety, I will actually be physically transforming how my body is actually operating. So this is where people have to understand that, oh, just get over it, you know, or you're depressed, get over it. They've got no idea, actually, about what's happening for people and how they're responding, because we're all affected by all sorts of things. We have a saying in our business, I may have shared this before, but it's worth repeating again. We have a saying in our business and our family, which we happily share with others, watch who you let near your mind.
Yeah.
Because those thoughts are contagious, and if people keep throwing labels at us all the time and saying, oh, they're this, they're that, and you believe it, then you're polluting your mind and you're actually creating lazy thinking.
Yep.
We need to be really careful how we manage all of these things.
Interestingly, on that, I've done a little bit of, I don't normally do research, but I've been doing some little games of my own lately of people who have done this. There's things flying around in the media at the moment about left-wing bias, left-wing agenda, radical right-wing, all of those sorts of terminologies which force you into a hole. But when I asked people who were critical of my thinking and calling me a lefty to explain what actually a lefty is, I've asked 10. I haven't got an answer from any of them yet.
Exactly, because these things are said for effect, not fact. And they haven't dug beneath the surface to... It's like when someone says to you, and I don't know if you... I'm sure you probably had it happen to you, but I know when someone says to you, oh, you know, I remember my children, they said it once, I think, and they've never said it again. They said, oh, Mum, you always or never... dot, dot, dot. Right?
Yep.
And I turned to them and I said, what behavioural evidence do you have that I always or never... dot, dot, dot. And they went, oh. And I went, yeah, exactly. About something now, that's okay, let's deal with that. But don't label it always or never, because there's not behavioural evidence to back that up. So I think I absolutely agree with you. If someone says, oh, you're a bit, okay, well, what does that actually look like? What does that mean? Can you tell me what's the criteria for being a lefty? What is the criteria for being a greenie? And watch what people do. Don't do it in a nasty or vindictive. I just say, that's really interesting. Can you tell me, what do you mean by that? What criteria are we looking at here? I'm really curious. I'd like to know. And if I can say, I was preparing for this, you know, about how we diminish ourselves when we start judging and pointing fingers, you know, at people. And you can't see it, but imagine I'm pointing a finger at you. The problem is most people don't look at the three fingers pointing back at themselves and ask, okay, is there something I could do? You know, like there's this sort of, they point and judge. But I was reminded of an incident in my life. I was about 10, and we'd gone down to Torquay for a family day to have a swim, and it was a beautiful day. And this is back in the early 70s, and I remember vividly first hearing the chants and bells walking along the footpath behind the beach, and I looked up and I started to smell incense. And then I saw these people wearing bright orange robes singing as they went, and I wandered over to them, and they actually had stopped and they kept singing, and I wasn't scared at all, I was just fascinated with them, and I started asking them lots of questions, and what were they doing, and what was this all about, and basically I was talking to a group of Hare Krishnas, and I was just fascinated by them, and I'd never seen anything like that in my childhood. And I thought it was just so liberating and wonderful. And they were so gracious and kind. And I don't know what it is, but, you know, my mum always said, you know, you're no better or worse than anyone else. You can always learn something from someone, whether you're more intelligent than or not. And so I basically just found myself just open to want to learn about people, about what they did, how they thought, and so on and so forth. So I can't speak for anyone else, but my life is all about understanding difference and what drives people and what makes them do what they do and how can we actually work together, because there is no such thing as biological race. That's actually a construct. There are racialized groups, but the research shows that we're all human. There's no such thing as biological races. We are just one, and that's what unites me to want to work with others and understand them.
So I just wanted to finish off. We've got a little bit of time left on the line, the infamous line, the mysterious line that we are perceived to be either on the left of or the right of. In my opinion, my voting principles have never changed, but who I vote for has changed because the line has moved. I still think I'm a 1970 small L liberal. But I don't think I'm a modern small L liberal because they don't really have the same identity. What's your perception of your period of time as a voter and perception of voting?
I agree with you, actually. The line has shifted dramatically, and I've been fascinated because in Goldstein, firstly, Goldstein's actually named after this woman called Vida Goldstein, who was actually the first woman parliamentary candidate in the British Commonwealth to actually try to stand for Parliament. Now, she tried to stand four times as an independent candidate but wasn't actually elected, but she was actually, worked really strongly for women and formed lobby groups and so on and so forth. So there's really interesting roots in terms of the name of our electorate. But what I've been finding very interesting is I grew up, my family voted, my father ran a business, very business oriented, they voted Liberal, as in Liberal Party, and that's what I grew up with. But over the years, I've actually found myself not being able to align to the values and principles and standards of what the Liberal Party now stands for. And I think the Labor Party has probably moved more to the centre and probably has taken up some of the space that may have been in place back in the 70s. So the interesting thing about all of this is that Ian McPhee, who was actually a minister in the Fraser government back in the 70s and then 80s, he ended up being in opposition. He was the first member for the electorate of Goldstein. And he's actually come out in support of Voices of Goldstein to find an independent candidate because, don't take my word for it, but he said the line has definitely moved and this is not the Liberal Party that he once belonged to. I'll just read you some of the things he basically said. He said the Liberal Party ceased to be liberal in the late 1980s. And he's basically said that this has distressed many people he knows in Goldstein, and friends tell him that there's a broad desire to elect a genuine small L Liberal candidate. So not Liberal Party, but small L Liberal, and that there's widespread disgust of Australian politics for many years, and that this is why the electorate of Goldstein must actually strive for more progressive members to represent voters' small L Liberal values. I mean, that's an indictment, isn't it, on his former party? I mean, I don't know if you're aware, but Malcolm Fraser, when Tony Abbott was actually elected as the leader of the Liberal Party, he resigned his membership from the Liberal Party. You've now got Malcolm Turnbull out actually now advocating for the election of independence. So you've got some interesting things happening here, and it comes back to what are the core values. And this is the thing, things shift and evolve and change, but whether they shift and evolve to what you want or not, you have to keep an eye on it. So just don't follow the label, the party label, but look at what's actually happened underneath. And so this is the thing about Ian McPhee. He was actually an advocate for, refugees. He helped Malcolm Fraser bring back a lot of Vietnamese people who were, as a result of the Vietnam War. He also actually crossed the floor to actually vote for the Sex Discrimination Act of 1984. So he is actually someone who I would consider would have the values and principles that I would like to follow, but they are no longer what the Liberal Party follow.
Yeah. I've had the privilege of interviewing regularly and mixing socially with recently retired Greens leader Richard Di Natale, and I would suggest that despite him being hammered for being a radical left-wing tree-hugging nut job, he was probably very much of that liberal-type person of the 1970s. And the fact that he he and his party weren't able to sell that concept, and hopefully they're able to in the future to find out that they're not actually to be scared of, that they espouse all the principles that you recently said about the sort of society that we all want to live in, which still allows someone to work hard and build a big house on the shore at Torquay if that's what they desire to do. It's not a scary agenda that's coming forward, but once again, that perception, it's an agenda that's been made to be scary by others.
Exactly. And so Ian McPhee is as deeply concerned as I am and many others about, you know, lack of integrity in politics. He's deeply concerned about the way it's shifted. But he basically says the key to success is grassroots discussion. We've been dominated for too long by faceless men in headquarters of the Liberal and Labor parties and the organisations that fund them. So essentially he is saying get out there and create a more inclusive democracy, and that's why he's also said we must invoke the spirit and determination of the Vita Goldsteins of our community to take action and bring more capable women and people into Canberra. So I don't think you get any better endorsement than something, you know, from Ian McPhee, who was a former Liberal Party minister.
Quite true. So we've run out of time, sadly. We will have you back for more of this stuff because it's enlightening, and I think I want to put it out there before people are critical. All that I'm trying to do in this position is not tell you how to vote. It's about bringing information to assist you to making the right decision when you do vote, and looking beyond the branding and the noise, and really think hard about what it is, what sort of a society you want to live in. And we'll continue to provide that advice. You can vote for whoever you like in the end, I don't care. But just please go through the thinking process, and I hope, Sue, that you have a similar philosophy.
Absolutely. But just, I think it's in everyone's best interest just to make informed decisions based on evidence and information and facts, not just on hearsay, brand and propaganda.
Excellently put. Good way to finish. Sue, thank you so much for your time. I look forward to our next chat already. I really appreciate your time.
My pleasure, Rob. Thank you. Take care, everyone.
Sue Barrett joining us. She's done regularly. So that's what we're about here. You can take that information, do with it what you